On the show today, Israel declares war on Hamas.
Israel continued pounding targets in Gaza on Sunday, in retaliation for a surprise incursion on its territory a day earlier by the militant group Hamas.
Plus, the UN Security Council meets. VOA is there.
I think what we heard from diplomats is, you know, while peace talks could be down the line, they're just really not on the horizon right now. Right now, it's about Israel regaining its sovereignty over its territory and rescuing its citizens.
And later, a look at the devastation in Afghanistan following multiple earthquakes and a look at the special role of female teachers in Zambia. Today is Monday, October 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. On Saturday morning, Hamas launched a surprise attack on Israel, firing hundreds of missiles, invading villages and military bases, as well as murdering civilians and taking hostages. At least 700 Israelis have been killed, with thousands injured. Israel retaliated swiftly, attacking Hamas command centers in Gaza, as well as engaging with militants on the battlefield. Hundreds of Palestinians have also been killed, and a hospital and mosque were damaged by shelling. The UN Security Council met Sunday evening in New York to discuss the ongoing situation. We'll hear from VOA's UN correspondent in a few minutes. Up first, though, the reaction in Washington has also been swift. U.S. President Joe Biden has directed additional support for Israel following the surprise attack. Here's VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias with more on efforts to de-escalate tensions.
As its cabinet confirmed a declaration of war, Israel continued pounding targets in Gaza on Sunday in retaliation for a surprise incursion on its territory a day earlier by the militant group Hamas. The U.S. Embassy in Israel warned American citizens that the situation continues to be unpredictable. But Washington continues its efforts to de-escalate it, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken during an appearance on ABC's This Week show.
I was on the phone with the Israeli president, the foreign minister. The entire government has been engaged throughout the region and well beyond, both to build support for Israel and to make sure that every country was using whatever means it has, whatever influence it has, to pull Hamas back, and also to make sure that we don't see conflict erupt in other areas.
Already, more than 20,000 people have sought shelter in schools run by the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. Meanwhile, relatives of Israeli civilians allegedly being held hostage by Hamas visited police stations to provide DNA samples that could aid the investigations. Washington has also been working on verifying reports that Americans are among those killed or are being held hostage by Hamas. U.S. Secretary Antony Blinken.
Any American anywhere who's being detained or held hostage, that is going to be a priority for this government, for this administration.
Details on how the surprise attack on Israel was conducted are still slow in coming. But Republican presidential candidate and former U.N. ambassador Nikki Haley said the U.S. can't afford not to pay close attention, even in the middle of its own political challenges.
America needs to wake up. We need to put this negativity and division behind us, and we need to focus on national security for ourselves and for our friends.
Republican Representative Matt Gaetz, who recently succeeded at ousting House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, appeared on NBC's Meet the Press. He expressed optimism that the subsequent congressional political vacuum that some worry could delay aid packages for Israel will be filled in the near future.
I think we're actually going to come together quite soon. I think we've got two great choices.
For its part, the White House announced that President Joe Biden has directed additional support for Israel and will remain in close contact with the Israeli government. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
The Israeli army said it was working Sunday to clear out Hamas fighters who remained in the country a day after their surprise attack on Israel. VOA's Steve Miller spoke with Libby Weiss. She's a major in reserve and spokesperson for the Israel Defense Forces.
The world woke up to the news of the Hamas attack on Saturday morning. You're there in Israel. What was it like as the events were unfolding?
It was truly a nightmare. I don't know that there is another way to describe what the entire country saw and what the entire country was experiencing. I mean, this is the worst massacre of Israeli civilians in Israel's history. And to watch Hamas terrorists invade the country, butcher men, women, children, the elderly on the streets of Israel, see them drag civilians into the Gaza Strip, the hostage situations that were taking place in Israeli communities along the southern border yesterday and that have continued to today. It's truly horrific. It's a nightmare for us on an individual level and certainly as a nation.
You describe this nightmare situation, the horrific visuals that have been playing out on television screens and video screens throughout the world. What is, I guess, a day and a half later, what are people, experiencing and expressing in the streets throughout Israel?
There's incredible devastation on one hand, of course, of the magnitude of the loss. And they're also within the military. There's a focus at this stage on really securing the southern border with Gaza, making sure that Israeli civilian communities are protected. The military has now started evacuating civilians living along the border with the Gaza Strip to remove them from the danger that's taking place. And looking down the road, really the focus will be on making sure that Hamas does not have the military capabilities of doing this again. And I think that we all understand that that is an absolutely necessary step and something that in any country would be the expectation of the military at this stage.
You're a major in the reserves, and Prime Minister Netanyahu said that reservists would be called up. So how is that taking place?
Well, it's already started. So reservists have been called in. Really, the entire military is operational at this stage. So reservists have been called in across all different units within the military. It's very much a national mission at this stage. And people really feel that they're fighting for their homes. When we see Hamas terrorists slaughter people on the streets and we see them take hostages in civilian communities within Israel, then there's, I think, no greater sense that everybody is fighting for their home, fighting to defend their families and their loved ones. And we're really seeing that in the last 36 hours, nearly 36 hours.
Major in Reserve Libby Weiss is a spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Forces. Major Weiss, thank you very much for your time.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
The Hamas attack on Saturday took not only Israel, but the whole world by surprise. The UN Security Council met to discuss the situation on Sunday evening. VOA's Margaret Bashir was there.
So it was a closed-door meeting. It was just the 15 council members. Israel and the Palestinian ambassador were not invited. They were there to discuss the situation. They were briefed by Tor Venesland, who's the UN's Middle East Peace Process Special Coordinator. He gave them a very grim briefing from what we hear. And basically, council members condemned what's happening in Israel, Hamas's attacks. And there was no formal statement from the council. Usually you would see some sort of a statement. It takes all 15 to agree it. There must be unity. What we heard from diplomats afterwards is that most council members, were condemning, not everyone, and no formal statement was put forward.
A Security Council meeting aside, I understand there were individual ambassadors as well outside, including from Israel and the Palestinian side. Can you tell us what they had to say?
Sure. Well, Israel's ambassador was, understandably upset. He came and told reporters that this was Israel's 9/11, a reference to the Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks on the United States in 2001 that killed nearly 3,000 people. I mean, we know hundreds of Israelis have been killed, injured, or kidnapped by Hamas on Saturday. He said from now on, nothing will be as it was. And he called what Hamas has done war crimes, and he said they must be unequivocally condemned by the Security Council. We also heard from the Palestinian ambassador, Riyad Mansour. He said that the Palestinian Authority has requested an emergency meeting of the Arab League at the foreign minister level later this week in Cairo. And, you know, he said, look, the Palestinian people have endured one deadly year after another under Israeli occupation. And Israel cannot wage a war against these people, their land, their holy sites, and expect peace in exchange. And he said there is a way for a different path where neither Palestinians or Israelis are killed. And he did urge peace. But I think what we heard from diplomats is, you know, while peace talks could be down the line, they're just really not on the horizon right now. Right now, it's about Israel regaining its sovereignty over its territory and rescuing its citizens.
Now, Margaret, I know it's a busy day at the UN. I know the Security Council meeting wasn't public. What's next? Will there be more public meetings? Will the General Assembly discuss this? Are there plans for more discussions or possibly some action as we go forward?
Well, I think all of those are possible. We just have to see where it's a fluid situation. We just have to see where the situation goes on the ground, where the UN and the UN Security Council can be useful if they pronounce on it. You know, it's only useful if it makes a good difference, right? So they need to see what they can do. But honestly, the Security Council is a bit limited in its tools at the moment. And, you know, the Secretary General has called for restraint, for calm, for release of the hostages. So has Mr. Venislan, his Middle East envoy. But until parties are ready to hear that, I think we're going to see a continuation of the ground war. I think Prime Minister Netanyahu said this weekend that it would be a long war.
VOA's Margaret Bashir is at the United Nations in New York. Margaret, thank you for your reporting on this.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And here's more stories we're following from around the world. A delegation of U.S. lawmakers led by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer arrived in China on Saturday. It's the first congressional visit to the country since 2019. The trip comes amid sharp deterioration in relations between the two countries, and as Chinese and U.S. officials try to lay the groundwork for a possible meeting between Presidents Joe Biden and Xi Jinping in November. On Sunday, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey inaugurated the first church built with government backing in the overwhelmingly Muslim country's 100-year history as a post-Ottoman state. Previously, Erdogan drew condemnation for converting ancient churches into mosques and making Islamic conservatism into a leading social force. And South Sudan's government on Friday admitted to having censored the media and removing articles it deemed to incite hatred after a UN-backed inquiry detailed pervasive restrictions on free press in the troubled country. More than 2,000 people have died in western Afghanistan following earthquakes and aftershocks. The UN says hundreds of homes have been destroyed. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, those numbers are expected to rise.
Rescuers pull a living child from under debris following multiple 6.3 magnitude earthquakes that struck Afghanistan on Saturday. It was a bright moment on an otherwise solemn day that one Taliban official said resulted in more than 2,000 deaths and more than 9,000 injuries. Mullah Janan Saik, Taliban spokesperson of the disaster ministry, speaking at a news conference in Kabul as provided by Reuters.
We have tried our best to treat victims. 10 rescue teams have been formed from different national and international institutions, in addition to the evacuation and rescue operations. The blood distribution process is going on too, and water and shelter have been provided for people in the district.
According to CBS News, the Taliban expect the death toll to rise. Families have taken to sleeping in the streets away from structures that could collapse at any moment. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says the earthquake affected 8 villages and destroyed more than 1,300 homes. Despite official claims of delivering aid for some now living outside, little has come their way. Area resident Nek Mohammed speaking with AFP.
We came home and we saw there was nothing left. Everything had turned to sand. We started to work with shovels and whatever we had to take out the women and children from the rubble. We have 20 to 30 people who died. We have nothing, no blankets or anything else.
Afghanistan is a mountainous country prone to earthquakes. According to the Reuters news agency, diplomats and aid officials say the ruling Taliban's strict restrictions on women and human rights in general have led to donors and aid agencies backing out of the country. The Washington Post reports first responders compared the damage of these recent quakes to one from 2022 that killed at least 1,000 people, one of the deadliest natural disasters in Afghanistan in decades. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Coming up on the program, a look at native languages in the United States. But first, in recent years, UNICEF and UNESCO reports have emphasized that female teachers are making a big difference when it comes to educating girls in Africa. VOA visited Lusaka, Zambia to see the impact they're having there. Kathy Short filed this story.
Josephine Mwaba has been a teacher for 22 years. She teaches biology at Lusaka's Kablonga Girls Secondary School. Mwaba says her students love learning, but the young girls here face challenges.
So the challenges are that girls fall pregnant, and sometimes they get married at an early stage. But being a female teacher, I encourage them not to get married early, not to fall pregnant, but to concentrate on school, because only when they get educated, then they'll be able to make proper decisions and live an independent life.
Rebecca Kaira is a student at the school, one of the many taught by female teachers like Mwaba.
Female teachers mostly encourage us girls because they act as mothers as we are here at school. So they mostly encourage us girls to focus on education.
According to Zambia's Teaching Service Commission, or TSC, there are more than 190,000 teachers in the country, but at least 150,000 more are needed to ensure quality and effective education. The TSC is a government body in charge of human resources, policy guidance, accreditation, and validation of teachers' qualifications. Sonakshi Sharma, an education research specialist at UNICEF Innocenti Global Office of Research and Foresight, works on the organization's Women in Learning Leadership Research. Sharma says evidence shows that for girls, female teachers play a positive role in learning.
So school leadership is an important vector to enhance student learning because they play a critical role in creating a high quality teaching and learning environment within schools. And this can contribute to overall student learning outcomes and well-being.
The Basic Education Teachers Union of Zambia, which represents teachers in the public service in the country, says female teachers are driving forces in Zambia's education system. One of the country's biggest challenges is serving students in rural areas. Another is paying teachers what they deserve, says Mwangala Mulako, the union's director of gender-related issues.
We have more of women representation in our union than the male. And then these teachers, most of them, the women that we have, they have upgraded themselves. What I mean is they've furthered in their studies from maybe a certificate holder to a diploma holder or a degree holder, even as far as masters in different fields of education. So the situation which is there is they're all crying for an upgrade. They need to be moved from the lower salary scales to higher salary scales.
According to UNICEF, African countries, including Zambia, are facing the world's worst teacher shortage. The continent still needs 17 million more teachers if it is to achieve universal primary and secondary education by 2030, and more female teachers are needed now more than ever. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
And finally today, Monday in the United States will be celebrated as Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day. When Christopher Columbus made contact with the native inhabitants in the Caribbean in 1492, there were more than 500 languages spoken across the Americas. In the land that became the United States, the remaining number of such languages has dwindled to about 100. Most now only have a handful of speakers. The story from VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman.
Alex Fire Thunder in South Dakota is teaching his two young boys the Lakota language because he wants them to have a strong sense of their Oglala Lakota Nation identity.
Language is everything. That's something that nobody can take away from them.
Fire Thunder is optimistic. His sons, ages 3 and 2, along with a newborn daughter, will have others besides themselves to converse in Lakota when they grow up.
There's immersion schools. There are other second language learners learning the language and teaching their children.
That was not the case for decades.
My mom is a speaker, but she didn't transmit the language to my siblings and I.
Native American children in North America for generations were sent to boarding schools where they were punished for speaking their own languages and were immersed in American culture. The chairman of the Language Conservancy, Wilhelm Maya, says that had a devastating effect.
There's only about 10 to 15 languages left in the U.S. that have any viable chances in terms of moving forward beyond the next 50 years.
When the languages lose their last fluent speakers, it can also mean the demise of their indigenous songs and prayers, explains Maya.
In the U.S. right now, the average speaker age is about 75 years old. The children are, for the most part, not learning the language. So there's a lot to do in order to try to get these languages back on their feet.
Hundreds of indigenous linguists, educators, and scholars are to gather this week for a conference in Bloomington, Indiana, to share knowledge and inspire language revitalization efforts. Steve Herman, VOA News.
And that's going to wrap it up for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over 2.5 years ago, the military seized power in Burma in a bloody coup. The regime has left Burma in ruins, with 4 out of 5 townships affected by armed clashes between the military and those that oppose its rule. The results have been devastating, said USAID Deputy Administrator Michael Schiffer in recent congressional testimony.
Today, due to the military's brutality, there are over 1.9 million people displaced in Burma and nearly 1 million refugees in Bangladesh and Thailand. The internally displaced communities are facing increased threats of violence from the military and facing ongoing trauma due to a conflict, a bungled COVID response, epic mismanagement of the economy, high food prices, and frequent displacement that has severely impacted the coping mechanisms of the internally displaced communities.
Through USAID, the United States has led the international community's humanitarian response to Burma and the Rohingya refugee crisis in Bangladesh by providing nearly $2.1 billion since 2017, said Deputy Administrator Schiffer.
We deliver humanitarian assistance to the displaced, conflict-afflicted, and other vulnerable groups by leveraging our partnerships with humanitarian organizations that deliver assistance to beneficiaries based on verifiable need.
And although at times this work has required engagement with governing authorities in Burma, said Deputy Administrator Schiffer, we do so with humanitarian principles first and foremost in mind. In Bangladesh, USAID supports emergency preparedness and response capacity of host communities in Cox's Bazar District, including funding for humanitarian coordination, nutrition, protection, and risk management. USAID also provides emergency support to pro-democracy activists and ethnic support organizations, civil society leaders, journalists, and human rights defenders, explained Deputy Administrator Schiffer. This ongoing assistance provides a critical safety net and includes temporary safe houses, subsistence living expenses, emergency medical needs, digital and physical security, legal aid, and psychosocial support, enabling individuals and entities to continue their work for a democratic future for Burma. The road ahead in Burma remains challenging, warned Deputy Administrator Schiffer. Nevertheless, USAID remains committed to provide the people of Burma with the support they need during this crisis, prioritizing humanitarian assistance, civilian protection, including early warning and early response, and support for the development and growth of governance institutions to advance U.S. policy objectives of a just, peaceful, inclusive, federal, and democratic Burma.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.